So, continue. Reading from Krishna book, chapter 2. So now we see that this thing, Krishna, is entered Devaki from the body of Vasudeva, heart to heart. And she looks like covered fire or misused education. But she was very effulgent, but because she was in a dark dungeon, Kamsa, nobody could see her. Kamsa, however, saw the transcendental beauty of his sister Devaki, and he at once concluded that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had taken shelter in her womb. She had never before looked so wonderfully beautiful. He could distinctly understand that there was something wonderful within the womb of Devaki. In this way, Kamsa became perturbed, because he was sure that the Supreme Personality of Godhead would kill him in the future. Excuse me. Because he was sure that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who would kill him in the future, had now come. Kamsa began to think, what is to be done with Devaki? Surely she has Vishnu or Krishna within her womb, so it is certain that Krishna has come to execute the mission of the demigods. And even if I immediately kill Devaki, this mission cannot be frustrated. Kamsa knew very well that no one can frustrate the purpose of Vishnu. Any intelligent man can understand that the laws of God cannot be violated. His purposes will be served in spite of all impediments offered by the demons. Kamsa thought, if I kill Devaki at the present moment, Vishnu will enforce his supreme will more vehemently. To kill Devaki just now would be a most abominable act. No one desires to kill his reputation even in an awkward situation. If I kill Devaki now, my reputation will be spoiled. Devaki is a woman, and she is under my shelter. She is pregnant, and if I kill her immediately, my reputation, the result of my pious activities, and my duration of life will all be finished. He further deliberated, a person who is too cruel is as good as dead even in this lifetime. No one likes a cruel person during his lifetime. And after his death, people curse him. On account of his self-identification with the body, he must be degraded and pushed into the darkest region of hell. Kamsa thus meditated on all the pros and cons of killing Devaki at that time. Kamsa finally decided not to kill Devaki right away, but to wait for the inevitable future. But his mind became absorbed in animosity against the personality of Godhead. He patiently waited for the delivery of the child, expecting to kill him as he had done previously with the other babies of Devaki. Thus being merged in the ocean of animosity against the personality of Godhead, he began to think of Krishna or Vishnu while sitting, while sleeping, while walking, while eating, while working, in all situations of his life. His mind became so much absorbed with the thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that indirectly he could see only Krishna or Vishnu around him. Unfortunately, although his mind was so absorbed in thought of Vishnu, he is not recognized as a devotee, because he was thinking of Krishna as an enemy. The state of mind of a great devotee is also to be absorbed in Krishna, but a devotee thinks of him favorably, not unfavorably. To think of Krishna favorably is Krishna consciousness, but to think of Krishna unfavorably is not Krishna consciousness. At this time, Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, accompanied by great sages like Narad, and followed by many other demigods, invisibly appeared in the house of Kamsa. They began to pray to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in select verses, which are very pleasing to the devotees and which award fulfillment of their desires. The first words they spoke proclaimed that the Lord is true to his vow, such as the tongue. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna descends to this material world just to protect the pious and destroy the impious. That is his vow. Demigods could understand that the Lord had taken his residence within the womb of Devaki to fulfill his vow, and they were very glad that the Lord was appearing in order to fulfill his mission. Then the demigods, addressed the Lord as Satyam Param, or the Supreme Absolute Truth. Everyone is searching after the truth. That is the philosophical way of life. The demigods give information that the Supreme Absolute Truth is Krishna. One who becomes fully Krishna conscious can attain the Absolute Truth. Krishna is the Absolute Truth because, unlike relative truth, he is truth in all three phases of eternal time. Time is divided into past, present, and future. Krishna is truth always, past, present, and future. In the material world, everything is being controlled by supreme time in the course of past, present, and future. But before the creation, Krishna was existing. And when there is creation, everything is resting in Krishna. And when the creation is finished, Krishna will remain. Therefore, he is the absolute truth in all circumstances. If there is any truth within this material world, it emanates from the supreme truth, Krishna. If there is any opulence within this material world, the cause of the opulence is Krishna. If there is any reputation within this material world, the cause of the reputation is Krishna. If there is any strength within this material world, the cause of such strength is Krishna. If there is any wisdom and education within this material world, the cause of such wisdom and education is Krishna. Therefore, Krishna is the source of all relative truths. This material world is composed of five principal elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And all such elements are emanations from Krishna. The material scientists accept these primary five elements as the cause of the material manifestation, but the elements in their gross and subtle states are produced by Krishna. The living entities who are working within this material world are products of his marginal potency. In the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that the whole manifestation is a combination of two kinds of energy of Krishna, the superior energy and the inferior energy. The living entities are the superior energy, and the dead material elements are his inferior energy. In its dormant state, everything remains in Krishna. The demigods continued to offer their respectful prayers under the supreme form of the Personality of Godhead, Krishna. By analytical study of the material manifestation, what is the material manifestation? It is just like a tree. A tree stands on the ground. Similarly, the tree of the material manifestation is standing on the ground of material nature. This material manifestation is compared to a tree because a tree is ultimately cut off in due course of time. A tree is called riksha. Riksha means that thing which will be ultimately cut off. Therefore, this tree of the material manifestation cannot be accepted as the ultimate truth, because it is influenced by time. But Krishna's body is eternal. He existed before the material manifestation. He is existing while the material manifestation is continuing and when it will be dissolved. He will continue to exist. Therefore, only Krishna can be accepted as the absolute truth. The Katha Upanishad also cites this example of the tree of the material manifestation standing on the ground of material nature. This tree has two kinds of fruits, distress and happiness. Those who are living in the tree of the body are just like two birds. One bird is the localized aspect of Krishna, known as Paramatma, and the other bird is the living entity. The living entity is eating the fruits of this material manifestation. Sometimes he eats the fruit of happiness and sometimes he eats the fruit of distress. But the other bird is not interested in eating the fruit of distress or happiness because he is self-satisfied. The Katha Upanishad states that one bird on the tree of the body is eating the fruits and the other bird is simply witnessing. The root of this tree extends in three directions. This means that the root of the tree is the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Just as the tree's root expands, so by association of the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, one expands his duration of material existence. The taste of the fruits are of four kinds: religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. And ultimately, liberation. According to the different association in the three modes of material nature, living entities are tasting different kinds of religiosity, different kinds of economic development, different kinds of sense gratification, and different kinds of liberation. Practically, all material work is performed in ignorance, but because there are three qualities, sometimes the quality of ignorance is covered with goodness or passion. The taste of these material fruits is accepted through five senses. The five sense organs through which knowledge is acquired are subjected to six kinds of whips: lamentation, illusion, infirmity, death, hunger, and thirst. The material body or the material manifestation is covered by seven layers: skin, flesh, blood, marrow, bone, fat, and semen. The branches of the tree are eight: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. There are nine gates in this body: two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, one mouth, one genital, one rectum. And there are 10 kinds of internal air passing within the body: prana, apana, udana, dhyana, samana, and so on. Two birds seated in this tree are explained above, as explained above, are the living entities and the localized Supreme Personality of Godhead, Paramatma. The root cause of the material manifestation described here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead expands himself to take charge of the three qualities of the material world. Vishnu takes charge of the mode of goodness. Brahma takes charge of the mode of passion. And Lord Shiva takes charge of the mode of ignorance. Brahma, by the mode of passion, creates this manifestation. Lord Vishnu maintains this manifestation by the mode of goodness. And Lord Shiva annihilates it by the mode of ignorance. The whole creation ultimately rests in the Supreme Lord. He's the cause of creation, maintenance, and dissolution. And when the whole manifestation is dissolved, in its subtle form, as the Supreme Lord's energy, it rests within his body. At present, the demigods pray, the Supreme Lord Krishna is appearing just for the maintenance of this material appearing just for the maintenance of this manifestation. Actually, the supreme cause is one, but less intelligent persons, being deluded by the three modes of material nature, see that the material world is manifest through different causes. Those who are intelligent can see the cause is one, Krishna. As it is stated in the Brahma Samhita, Ishvaraha Parama Krishna, Sarva Karana Karanam. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of all causes. Brahma is the deputed agent for creation, Vishnu, the expansion of Krishna for maintenance, and Lord Shiva is the expansion of Krishna for dissolution. Our dear Lord, the demigods prayed, it is very difficult to understand your eternal form or personality. People in general are unable to understand your actual form. Therefore, you are personally descended to exhibit your original eternal form. Somehow people can understand the different incarnations of your Lordship, but they are puzzled to understand the eternal form of Krishna with two hands moving among human beings exactly like one of them. This eternal form of your Lordship gives ever-increasing transcendental pleasure to the devotees. But for the non-devotees, this form is very dangerous. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is very pleasing to the sadhus, paricchannaya, sadhunam. But this form is very dangerous for the demons because Krishna also descends to kill the demons. He is therefore simultaneously pleasing to the devotees and dangerous to the demons. Our dear lotus-eyed Lord, you are the source of pure goodness. There are many great sages who simply by samadhi or transcendentally meditating upon your lotus feet and thus being absorbed in your thought have easily transformed the great oceans of nations created by material nature into no more than water in a calf's footprint. The purpose of meditation is to focus the mind upon the personality of Godhead, beginning from his lotus feet. Simply by meditation on the lotus feet of the Lord, great sages cross over this vast ocean of material existence without difficulty. O self-illuminated one, the great saintly persons, who have crossed over the ocean of nations by the help of the transcendental boat of your lotus feet, have not taken away that boat. It is still lying on this side. If one takes a boat to cross over a river, the boat also goes with one to the other side of the river. And so when one reaches the destination, how can the same boat be available to those who are still on this side? To answer this difficulty, the demigods say in their prayer that the boat of the Lord's lotus feet is not taken away. The devotees still remaining on this side are able to pass over the ocean of material nature because the pure devotees do not take the boat with them when they cross over. When one simply approaches the boat, they say you have to get in it, you just approach the boat. The whole ocean of material nations is reduced to the size of the water in a calf's footprint. Therefore, the devotees do not need to take the boat to the other side. They simply cross the ocean immediately. Because the great saintly persons are compassionate toward all conditioned souls, the boat is still lying on this side. In other words, one can meditate upon the lotus feet of the Lord at any time, and by so doing, one can cross over the great ocean of material existence. Meditation means concentration upon the lotus feet of the Lord. Lotus feet indicate the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But those who are impersonalists do not recognize the lotus feet of the Lord, and therefore their object of meditation is something impersonal. The demigods express their mature verdict that persons who are interested in meditating on something void or impersonal, cannot cross the ocean of meshes. Such persons simply imagine that they become liberated. O lotus-eyed Lord, their intelligence is contaminated because they fail to meditate upon the lotus feet of your Lordship. As a result of this neglectful activity, the impersonalists fall down again into the material way of conditioned life, although they may temporarily rise to the point of impersonal realization. Impersonalists undergo severe austerities and penances to merge themselves into Brahman effulgence or impersonal Brahman existence, but their minds are not free from material contamination. They have simply tried to negate the material way of thinking. That does not mean that they have become liberated. Thus, they fall down. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is stated that the impersonalist has to undergo great tribulation in realizing his ultimate goal. At the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also stated that without devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot achieve liberation from the bondage of fruitive activities. The statement of Lord Krishna is there in the Bhagavad Gita, and in Srimad Bhagavatam, the statement of the great sage Narada is there, and here also the demigods confirm it. People who have not taken to devotional service are understood to have come short of the ultimate person, the ultimate purpose of knowledge, and are not favored by your grace. The impersonalists simply think that they are liberated, but actually they have no feeling for the personality of Godhead. They think that when Krishna comes into the material world, he accepts a material body. They therefore overlook the transcendental body of Krishna. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, Avajananti Mam Mudha. In spite of conquering material lust and rising to the point of liberation, the impersonalists fall down. If they are engaged just in knowing things for the sake of knowledge and do not take to the devotional service of the Lord, they cannot achieve the desired result. Their achievement is the trouble they take, and that is all. It is clearly stated in the Bhagavad Gita that to realize Brahman identification is not all. Brahman identification may help one become joyful without material attachment or detachment and to achieve the platform of equanimity, but after this stage one has to take to devotional service. When one takes to devotional service after being elevated to the platform of Brahman realization, he is then admitted into the spiritual kingdom for permanent residence in association with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the result of devotional service. Those who are devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead never fall down like the impersonalists. Even if the devotee falls down, even if the devotees fall down, they remain affectionately attached to the Lord. They can meet all kinds of obstacles on the path of devotional service, and freely, without any fear, they can surmount such obstacles. Because of their surrender, they are certain that Krishna will always protect them. As it is promised by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, my devotees are never vanquished. Our dear Lord, the demigods continued, you have appeared in your original, unalloyed form, the eternal form of goodness, and for the welfare of all living entities within this material world. Taking advantage of your appearance, all of them can now easily understand the nature and the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Persons who belong to the four divisions of the social orders, of the social order, the brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprasthas, and sannyasis, can all take advantage of your appearance. Dear Lord, husband of the goddess of fortune, devotees who are dovetailed in your service do not fall down from their high position like the impersonalists, being protected by you. the devotees are able to traverse over the heads of many of Maya's commanders in chief, who can always put stumbling blocks on the path of liberation. Dear Lord, you appear in your eternal transcendental form for the benefit of the living entities, so that they can see you face to face and offer their worshipful sacrifices by ritualistic performance of the Vedas, mystic meditation, and devotional service as recommended in the scriptures. Dear Lord, if you did not appear in your eternal transcendental form, full of bliss and knowledge, a form which can eradicate all kinds of speculative ignorance about your position, then all people would simply speculate about you according to their respective modes of material nature. The appearance of Krishna is the answer to all imaginative iconography of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone imagines the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead according to his mode of material nature. In the Brahma Samhita, it is said that the Lord is the oldest person. Therefore, a section of religionists imagine that God must be very old, and therefore they depict the form of the Lord like a very old man. But in the same Brahma Samhita, it is contradicted. Although he is the oldest of all living entities, he has his eternal form as a fresh youth. The exact words used in this connection in Srimad Bhagavatam are, this demigod speaking, Vijnanam, Ajnanam, Vidyara Pramarjanam. Vijnanam means transcendental knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vijnanam is also experience knowledge. Transcendental knowledge has to be accepted by the descending process of the city succession. As Brahma presented the knowledge of Krishna in the Brahma Samhita, the Brahma Samhita is Vijnanam as realized by Brahma's transcendental experience. And in that way, he presents the form and pastimes of Krishna in the transcendental abode. This knowledge is Ajnanam Vida Amartanarjanam, that which can smash all kinds of speculation in ignorance. People are imagining the form of the Lord. Sometimes he has no form, and sometimes he has a form according to their different imaginations. But the presentation of Krishna in Brahma Samhita is Vijnanam, scientific experience knowledge given by Lord Brahma and accepted by Lord Chaitanya. There is no doubt about it. Krishna's form, Krishna's flute, Krishna's color, everything is reality. Here it is said that this Vijnanam is always defeating all kinds of speculative knowledge. Therefore, without your appearing as Krishna, as you are, neither Ajnana Vida, the nescience of speculative knowledge, nor Vijnanam would be realized. Ajnana Vida Pramarpanam, excuse me, Marjanam. By your appearance, the speculative knowledge of ignorance will be vanquished, and the real experience knowledge of authorities like Lord Brahma will be established. Men influenced by the three modes of material nature imagine their own God according to the modes of nature. In this way, God is presented in various ways, but your appearance will establish what the real form of God is. The highest blunder committed by the impersonalists is to think that when the incarnation of God comes, he accepts the form of matter in the mode of goodness. Actually, the form of Krishna or Narayan is transcendental to any material idea. Even the greatest impersonalist, Shankaracharya, has admitted Narayanaha paro avyakta. The material creation is caused by the avyakta, impersonal manifestation of matter, or the non-phenomenal total reservoir of matter, but Krishna is transcendental to that material conception. This is expressed in Srimad Bhagavatam as Shuddha Sattva, or transcendental goodness. He does not belong to the material mode of goodness, and he is above the position of material goodness. He belongs to the transcendental, eternal status of bliss and knowledge. Little kids, sometimes grown-ups. That's philosophy. Dear Lord, when you appear in your different incarnations, you take different names and forms according to different situations. Lord Krishna is your name because you are all attractive. You're called Shyama Sundar because of your transcendental beauty. Shyama means blackish, yet it is said that you are more beautiful than thousands of cupids, Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya. Although you appear in a color which is compared to the blackish cloud, because you are the transcendental absolute, your beauty is many, many times more attractive than the delicate body of Cupid. Sometimes you are called Giridhari because you lifted the hill known as Govardhan. You are sometimes called Nandanandana, or Vasudeva, or Devaki Nandana, because you appear as the son of Maharaj Nanda, or Vasudev, or Devaki. The impersonalists think that your many names or forms are given according to a particular type of work and quality, because they accept you from the position of a material observer. Our dear Lord, the way of understanding is not to study your absolute nature, forms, and activities by mental speculation. One must engage himself in devotional service, then one can easily understand your absolute nature and your transcendental form, names, and qualities. Actually, only a person who has a little taste for the service of your lotus feet can understand your transcendental nature or form and qualities. Others may go on speculating for millions of years, but it is not possible for them to understand even a single part of your actual position. In other words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, cannot be understood by the non-devotees, because there is a curtain of yoga maya which covers Krishna's actual features. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Naham Prakash Sarvasya, the Lord says, I am not exposed to anyone and everyone. When Krishna came, he was actually present on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and everyone saw him, but not everyone could understand that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Still, everyone who died in his presence attained complete liberation from material bondage and was transferred to the spiritual world. O Lord, the impersonalists, or non-devotees, cannot understand that your name is identical with your form. Since the Lord is absolute, there is no difference between his name and his actual form. In the material world, there is a difference between form and name. The mango fruit is different from the name of the mango. One cannot taste the mango fruit simply by chanting mango, mango, mango. But the devotee who knows that there is no difference between the name and the form of the Lord chants Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and realizes that he is always in Krishna's company. For persons who are not very advanced in absolute knowledge of the Supreme, Lord Krishna exhibits his transcendental pastimes. Such persons can simply think of the pastimes of the Lord and get full benefit. Since there is no difference between the transcendental name and form of the Lord, there is no difference between the transcendental pastimes and the form of the Lord. For those who are less intelligent, like women, laborers, or the mercantile class, the great sage Vyasadeva wrote the Mahabharata. In the Mahabharata, Krishna is present in his different activities. The Mahabharata is history, and simply by studying, hearing, and memorizing the transcendental activities of Krishna, the less intelligent can also gradually rise to the standard of pure devotees. The pure devotees who are always absorbed in the thought of the transcendental lotus feet of Krishna, and who are always engaged in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, are never to be considered to be in the material world. Srila Rupa Goswami has explained that those who are always engaged in Krishna consciousness with body, mind, and activities are to be considered liberated even within this body. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Those who are engaged in the devotional service to the Lord have already transcended the material position. Krishna appears in order to give a chance to both the devotees and the non-devotees for realization of the ultimate goal of life. The devotees get a direct chance to see Him and worship Him. Those who are not on the platform get the chance to become acquainted with His activities and thus become elevated to the supreme position. Our dear Lord, O Supreme Controller, when you appear on earth, all the demons like Kamsa and Jarasandha will be vanquished, and all good fortune will be ushered into the world. When you walk on the globe, your lotus feet will impress the ground on the ground the marks of your soul, such as the flag, the trident, and the thunderbolt. Thus you will grace both the earth and us on the heavenly planets. Who shall see those marks? O dear Lord, the demigods continued, you are unborn. Therefore we do not find any reason for your appearance other than for your pleasurable pastimes. Although the reason for the appearance of the Lord is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, descends just to give protection to the devotees and vanquish the non-devotees, actually He descends for His pleasure meeting with the devotees. Not really to vanquish the non-devotees. The non-devotees can be vanquished simply by one kick of material nature. Quote, the action and reactions of material nature, creation, maintenance, and annihilation, are being carried out automatically. But simply by taking shelter of your holy name, the devotees are sufficiently protected, because your holy name and your personality are none different. The protection of the devotees and the annihilation of the non-devotees are actually not the business of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When He descends, it is just for His transcendental pleasure. There cannot be any other reason for His appearance. In other words, Krishna in particular is above and beyond what is the minimum needed. Our dear Lord, you are appearing as the best of the Yadu dynasty, and we are offering our respectful, humble obeisances unto your lotus feet. Before this appearance, you also appeared as the fish incarnation, as the horse incarnation, as the tortoise incarnation, as the half-man, half-lion incarnation, as the boar incarnation, as the swan incarnation, as King Ramachandra, as Parashurama, and as many other incarnations. You appear just to protect the devotees, and we request you, in your present appearance, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, to give us similar protection all over the three worlds and remove all obstacles for the peaceful execution of our lives. Dear Mother Devaki, the last prayer. Now they're addressing Devaki. Dear Mother Devaki, within your womb is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. appearing along with all his plenary extensions. He is the original personality of Godhead, appearing for our welfare. Therefore, you should not be afraid of your brother, the king of Bhoja. Your son, Lord Krishna, who is the original personality of Godhead, will appear for the protection of the pious Yadu dynasty. The Lord is appearing not alone, but accompanied by his immediate plenary portion, Baladeva. Devaki was very much afraid of her brother Kamsa because he had already killed so many of her children. So she was very anxious about Krishna. In the Vishnu Purana, it is stated that in order to pacify Devaki, all the demigods, along with their wives, used to visit her to encourage her not to be afraid that her son would be killed by Kamsa. Krishna, who was within her womb, was to appear not only to diminish the burden of the world, but specifically to protect the interests of the Yadu dynasty. And certainly, to protect Devaki and Vasudeva. It is understood that Krishna has been transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki and from there to her womb. Thus, all the demigods worship Devaki, the mother of Krishna. After thus worshipping the transcendental form of the Lord, all the demigods with Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva placed in front departed for their heavenly abodes. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purport of the second chapter of Krishna, prayers by the demigods for Lord Krishna in the womb. Stop crying now. One more chapter. If you do not act on this, then the desires are there, but you just ignore them and you don't act on them, then for all practical purposes you're liberated. They'll go away for the time of death, Krishna will take care of them. If we are not controlled by material desires, then we're in a liberated position. Prabhupada says this. Even though a follower may not be liberated, if he strictly follows the order of the liberated Supreme Personality of Godhead, all of his actions are naturally liberated from the contamination of material nature. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya says, Amara Ashtana Guruma, by my order, by following my order, become Jesus. That's what it says. It's really based on what you do.
Because you may have an idea of what you want, have an idea of what I want, what I would like, and then have expectations from other people who may say this is what you should be doing. But they have a realization of what Krishna means, what you do, and it's totally different than everything else.
That's true.
And in times you see the push, and the push for Krishna is so powerful, it's more powerful than any other.
Yeah.
So, last night I stayed up all night, I just was talking about it. I actually stayed with people because I was really contemplating a lot of things that were going on in my mind, but then understanding from my past, the push, and direction, you can be on that exam. Because of that exam, in the end, because of it, I was following you because of him, the energy. So what do you do?
You do, that's what Krishna's love is here for, you just hang on. Surrender means, Krishna, I'm going to do what you say, and I'm not going to be in anxiety because you'll take care of all this other stuff. You have to do it. The idea of surrender is that you understand you will not be able to do anything except for the protection of Krishna, and you accept it. Surrender is like this. You're walking along, hear what Krishna wants you to do, and then you keep on walking. Even though you don't see what's holding you up. Depend upon Krishna.
It's kind of like it's a big boulder. It's just land of power. It's a huge boulder. Particularly when I like to think of it as instigating material nature or Maya, because for a few years I've been maintaining on I haven't been pushing. And now I have been pushed.
Yeah.
I feel like bolder.
Oh, well, I understand that position. So, the boulder, the remover of boulders is also Krishna. Because Indra has a weapon of lightning, and he breaks up rock with it. He hits the mountaintops and shatters the mountaintops. So the nails of Nisrinadeva are compared to that lightning, Vajranaka. They break up the bolts. They break up the rock. You cannot break up the rock. The Lord and Srinivas can break up the rock. The only thing you have to ask them, break up this rock completely. Not break up part of it or let me keep on half. You ask them, he'll do it. That's all right. Chapter 3, the birth of Lord Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that his appearance, birth, and activities are all transcendental, and that one who understands them actually becomes immediately eligible to be transferred to the spiritual world. The Lord's appearance or birth is not like that of an ordinary man who's forced to accept a material body according to his past deeds. The Lord's experience is explained in the second chapter. He appears out of his own sweet pleasure. When the time was mature for the appearance of the Lord, the constellations became very auspicious. The astrological influence of the star known as Rohini was predominant. This star is considered to be very auspicious and is under the direct supervision of Brahma. According to astrological conclusion, besides the proper situation of the stars, there are auspicious and inauspicious moments due to the different situations of the different planetary systems. At the time of Krishna's birth, the planetary systems were automatically adjusted so that everything became auspicious. At that time, in all directions, east, west, south, north, everywhere, there was an atmosphere of peace and prosperity. There were auspicious stars visible in the sky and on the surface, in all towns and villages, and pasturing grounds, and within the minds of everyone, there were signs of good fortune. The rivers were flowing, full of water, and lakes were beautifully decorated with lotus flowers. The forests were full with beautiful birds and peacocks. All the birds within the forest began to sing with sweet voices and the peacocks began to dance along with their consorts. The wind blew very pleasantly, carrying the aroma of different flowers, and the sensation of bodily touch was very pleasing. At home, the brahmanas, who were accustomed to offering sacrifices in the fire, found their homes very pleasant for offerings. Due to the disturbances created by the demoniac kings, the sacrificial fire had been almost stopped in the houses of brahmanas, but now they could find the opportunity to start the fire peacefully. Being forbidden to offer sacrifices, the brahmanas had been very much distressed in mind, intelligence, and activities, but just on the point of Krishna's appearance, automatically their minds became full of joy. And because they could hear transcendental vibrations in the sky proclaiming the appearance of the Supreme Personality, Godhead. The denizens of the Gandharva and Kinnara planets began to sing, and the denizens of Siddhaloka and the planets of the Charanas began to offer prayers in the service of the Personality of Godhead. In the heavenly planets, the angels and their wives, along with the Vidyadharas and their wives, began to dance. The great sages and demigods, being pleased, began to shower flowers. At the seashore, there was the sound of mild waves, and above the sea, there were clouds in the sky which began to thunder very pleasingly. When things were adjusted like this, Lord Vishnu, who is residing within the heart of every living entity, appeared in the darkness of night as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, before Devaki, who appeared as one of the demi-goddesses. The appearance of Lord Vishnu at that time could be compared to the rising of the full moon on the eastern horizon. The objection may be raised that since Lord Krishna appeared on the eighth day of the waning moon, there could be no rising of the full moon. In answer to this, it may be said that Lord Krishna appeared in the dynasty which is in the hierarchy of the moon, Surya Vamsa, the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas are either Surya Vamsa, the dynasty of the moon, or Chandravamsa. And Suryavamsa, dynasty of the sun, I'm sorry. And Chandravamsa, dynasty of the moon. So he's Chandravamsa. Ramchandra is Suryavamsa. Krishna's Chandravamsa. Lord Krishna appeared in the dynasty of the moon. Okay. In answer to this, it may be said that Lord Krishna appeared in the dynasty which is in the hierarchy of the moon. Therefore, although the moon was incomplete that night, because of the Lord's appearance in the dynasty, wherein the moon is himself the original person, the moon was in an overjoyous condition, so by the grace of Krishna, he could appear just as a full moon. So that comparison is okay. Vasudev saw that the wonderful child born as a baby with four hands holding conch shell, club, disc, and lotus flower, decorated with the mark of Shivas, wearing the jeweled necklace of Kastuba stone, dressed in yellow silk, appearing dazzling like a bright blackish cloud, wearing a helmet bedecked with the Vaidurya stone, valuable bracelets, earrings, and similar ornaments all over his body, and beautified by an abundance of hair on his neck. Due to the extraordinary features of the child, Vasudeva was struck with wonder. How could a newly born child be so decorated? He could therefore understand said Lord Krishna had now appeared, and he became overpowered by the occasion. Vasudeva very humbly wondered that although he was an ordinary living entity, conditioned by material nature, and was externally imprisoned by Kamsa, the all-pervading personality of Godhead Vishnu or Krishna had appeared as a child in his home, exactly in his original position. No earthly child is born with four hands, decorated with ornaments and nice clothing, fully equipped with all the signs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Over and over again, Vasudeva glanced at his child, and he considered how to celebrate this auspicious moment. Generally, when a male child is born, he thought, people observe the occasion with jubilant celebrations, and in my home, although I am in prison, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has taken birth. How many millions and millions of times should I be prepared to observe this auspicious ceremony? When Vasudeva, who was also called Anakadundundi, was looking at his newborn baby, he was so happy that he wanted to give many thousands of cows in charity to the Brahmanas. According to the Vedic system, whenever there is an auspicious ceremony in the Kshatriya king's palace, out of joy the king gives many things in charity. Cows decorated with golden ornaments are delivered to the Brahmins and sages. Vasudeva wanted to perform a charitable ceremony to celebrate Krishna's appearance, but because he was shackled within the walls of Kamsa's prison, this was not possible. Instead, within his mind, he gave thousands of cows to the Brahmanas. When Vasudeva was convinced that the newborn child was the Supreme Personality of God himself, he bowed down with folded hands and began to offer him prayers. At that time, Vasudeva was in the transcendental position, and he became completely free from all fear of Kamsa. The newborn baby was also flashing his effulgence within the room in which he appeared. Vasudeva then began to offer his prayers. My dear Lord, I can understand who you are. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Super Soul of all living entities, and the Absolute Truth. You have appeared in your own eternal form, which is directly perceived by us. I understand that because I am afraid of Kamsa, you have appeared just to deliver me from that fear. You do not belong to this material world. You are the same person who brings about the cosmic manifestation simply by glancing over material nature. One may argue that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who creates the whole cosmic manifestation, simply by his glance, cannot come within the womb of Devaki, the wife of Vasudeva. To eradicate this argument, Vasudeva said, "My dear Lord, it is not a very wonderful thing that you have appeared within the womb of Devaki, because the creation was also made in that way. You were lying in the causal ocean as Mahavishnu, and by your breathing process, innumerable universes came into existence. Then you entered into each of the universes as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. Then again you expanded yourself as Kshirodakshayi Vishnu, and entered into the hearts of all living entities, and entered even within the atoms. Therefore your entrance into the womb of Devaki is understandable in the same way. You appear to have in it, but you are simultaneously all-pervading. We can understand your entrance and non-entrance from material examples. The total material energy remains intact, even after being divided into 16 elements. The material body is nothing but the combination of the five gross elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether. Whenever there is a material body, it appears that such elements are newly created, but actually the elements are always existing outside of the body. Similarly, although you have appeared as a child in the womb of Devaki, you are also existing outside. You are always in your abode, but still you can simultaneously expand yourself into millions of forms. One has to understand your appearance with great intelligence because the material energy is also emanating from you. You are the original source of the material energy, just as the sun is the source of the sunshine. The sunshine cannot cover the sun globe, nor can the material energy, being an emanation from you, cover you. You appear to be in three modes of material nature, but actually the three modes of material nature cannot cover you. This is understood by the highly intellectual philosophers. In other words, although you appear to be within the material energy, you are never covered by it. We hear from the Vedic version that the Supreme Brahman exhibits his effulgence, and therefore everything becomes illuminated. We can understand from the Brahma Samhita that the Brahma Jyoti, or the Brahman effulgence, emanates from the body of the Supreme Lord. And from the Brahman effulgence, all creation takes place. It is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita that the Lord is the support of the Brahman effulgence. Therefore, originally, he is the root cause of everything. But persons who are less intelligent, think that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes within this material world, he accepts material qualities. Such conclusions are not very mature, but are made by the less intelligent. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is directly and indirectly existing everywhere. He is outside this material creation, and he is also within it. He is within this material creation not only as Garbhodakshayi Vishnu, he is also within the atom. The existence of the atom is due to his presence. Nothing can be separated from his existence. In the Vedic injunctions, we find that the Supreme Soul, or the root cause of everything, has to be searched out because nothing exists independently of the Supreme Soul. Therefore, the material manifestation is also a transformation of his potency. Both inert matter and the living force, the soul, are emanations from him. Only the foolish conclude that when the Supreme Lord appears, he accepts the conditions of matter. Even if he appears to have accepted a material body, he is not subjected to any material condition. Krishna has therefore appeared and defeated all imperfect conclusions about the appearance and disappearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. My Lord, your appearance, existence, and disappearance are beyond the influence of the material qualities. Because your Lordship is the Supreme Brahman and the controller of everything, there is nothing inconceivable or contradictory in you. As you have said, material nature works under your superintendence, just like a government office works under the orders of the chief executive. The influence of subordinate activities cannot affect you, since you are the Supreme Brahman. Everything is existing within you, and since all the activities of material nature are controlled by your Lordship, none of these activities affect you. You are called Shuklam. Shuklam, or whiteness, is the symbolic representation of the Absolute Truth because it is unaffected by the material qualities. Lord Brahma is called Rakta, or red, because Brahma represents the quality of passion for creation. Darkness is entrusted to Lord Shiva because he annihilates the cosmos. The creation, annihilation, and maintenance of this cosmic manifestation are conducted by your potencies, yet you are always unaffected by those qualities. As confirmed in the Vedas, Parer Ki Nirgunaha Saksha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always free from all material qualities. Nirguna Sakshat. It is also said that the qualities of passion and ignorance are non-existent in the person of the Supreme Lord. My dear Lord, you are the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Great, maintaining the order of this cosmic manifestation. Yet in spite of your being the Supreme Controller, you have so kindly appeared in my home. The purpose of your appearance is to kill the followers of the demoniac rulers of the world who are in the dress of royal princes, but are actually demons. I am sure that you will kill all of them and their followers and soldiers. I understand that you have appeared in order to kill the uncivilized Kamsa and his followers, but knowing that you were to appear in order to kill him and his followers, he has already killed so many of your predecessors, your elder brothers. Now he is simply awaiting the news of your birth. As soon as he hears about it, he will immediately appear with all kinds of weapons to kill you. After this prayer of Vasudeva, Devaki, the mother of Krishna, offered her prayers. She was very frightened because of her brother's atrocities. Devaki said, "My dear Lord, your eternal forms, like Narayan, Lord Ram, Hayashirsha, Varaha, Vishnu, Brahman, and Baladev, and millions of similar incarnations emanating from Vishnu are described in the Vedic literature as original. You are original because all your forms as incarnations are outside of this material creation. Your form was existing before this cosmic creation was, before this cosmic manifestation was created. Your forms are eternal and all-pervading. They are also self-effulgent, changeless, and uncontaminated by the material quality. Such eternal forms are ever cognizant and full of bliss. They are situated in transcendental goodness and are always engaged in different pastimes. You are not limited to a particular form only. All such transcendental eternal forms are self-sufficient. I can understand that you are the Supreme Lord Vishnu. After many millions of births, when Lord Brahma comes to the end of his life, the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation takes place. At that time, the five elements, namely earth, water, fire, air, and ether, enter into the Mahat Tattva. The Mahat Tattva then enters by the force of time into the non-manifested, total material energy. The total material energy enters into the energetic pradhan, and the pradhan enters into you. Therefore, after the annihilation of the whole cosmic manifestation, you alone remain with your transcendental name, form, qualities, and paraphernalia. My Lord, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you because you are the director of the unmanifested total material energy and the ultimate reservoir of the material nature. My Lord, the whole cosmic manifestation is under the influence of time, beginning from the moment up to the duration of the year. All act under your direction. You are the original director of everything and the reservoir of all potent energies. All the conditioned souls are continually fleeing from one body to another, and one planet to another, that they do not get free from the onslaught of birth and death, but when one of these fearful living entities comes under the shelter of your lotus feet, he can lie down without anxiety of being attacked by formidable death. The statement by Devaki is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord himself. The Lord says that even after traveling all over the universe, from Brahmaloka to Patalaloka, one cannot escape the attack of birth, death, disease, and old age, but one who enters the kingdom of God, the Lord says, is never again obliged to come to the material world. Therefore, my Lord, I request you to save me from the cruel hand of Kamsa, the son of Ugrasena. I am praying to your Lordship to please rescue me from this fearful condition, because you are always ready to give protection to your servitors. The Lord has confirmed this statement in the Bhagavad Gita by assuring Arjuna, you may declare to the world, my devotee shall never be vanquished. While us praying to the Lord for rescue, Mother Devaki nonetheless expressed her motherly affection. I understand, she said, that this transcendental form is generally perceived in meditation by great sages, but I am still afraid, because as soon as Kamsa understands that you have appeared, he might harm you. So I request that, for the time being, you become invisible to our material eyes. In other words, she requested the Lord to assume the form of an ordinary child. She continued, my only cause of fear for my brother Kamsa is due to your appearance. My Lord Madhusudan, Kamsa may not know that you are already born. Therefore, I request you to conceal this four-arm form of your Lordship, which holds the four symbols of Vishnu, namely the conch shell, the disc, the club, and the lotus flower. My dear Lord, at the end of the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation, you put the whole universe within your abdomen. Still, by your unalloyed mercy, you have appeared in my womb, and I am surprised that you imitate the activities of ordinary human beings just to please your devotee. On hearing the prayers of Devaki, the Lord replied, my dear mother, in the millennium of Swayambhuva Muni, my father Vasudeva was living as one of the Prajapatis. His name, at the time, was Sukapat, and you were his wife, named Krishna. At that time, when Lord Brahma was desiring to increase the population, he requested you to generate offspring. You controlled your senses and performed severe austerities. By practicing the breathing exercises of the yoga system, both you and your husband could tolerate all the influences of the material laws, the rainy season, the onslaught of the wind, and the scorching heat of the sunshine. You also executed all religious principles. In this way, you were able to cleanse your heart and control the influences of material laws. In executing your austerity, you used to eat only the leaves of the trees which fell to the ground. Then, with a steady mind and controlled sex desire, you worshipped me, desiring some wonderful benediction from me. Both of you practiced severe austerities for 12,000 years by the calculation of the demigods. During that time, your mind was always absorbed in me. When you were executing devotional service and always thinking of me within your heart, I was very pleased with you, O sinless mother. Your heart is therefore... I was very pleased with you, then. O sinless mother, your heart is therefore always pure. At that time, I also appeared before you in this form, just to fulfill your desire. and I asked you to ask whatever you desired. At that time, you wished to have me born as your son. Although you saw me personally, instead of asking for your complete liberation from material bondage, under the influence of my energy, you asked me to become your son. In other words, to appear in the material world, the Lord selected his mother and father, namely Krishna and Sutapa, respectively. Whenever the Lord comes as a human being, he must have a mother and a father. So he selected Krishna and Sutapa perpetually as his mother and father. And on account of this, neither Krishna nor Sutapa could ask the Lord for liberation. Liberation is not so important as the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The Lord could have awarded Krishna and Sutapa immediate liberation, but he preferred to keep them within this material world for his different appearances, as will be explained in the following verses. On receiving the benediction from the Lord, to become his father and mother, Sutapa and Krishna retired from the activities of austerity and lived as husband and wife in order to beget a child who was the Supreme Lord himself. In due course of time, Krishna became pregnant and gave birth to the child. The Lord spoke to Devaki and Vasudeva. At that time, my name was Krishna Garbha. In the next millennium, you took birth as Aditi and Kashyapa, and I became your child of the name Upendra. At that time, my form was just like a dwarf, and for this reason, I was known as Vamanadeva. I gave you the benediction that I would take birth as your son three times. The first time, I was known as Krishna Garbha, born of Krishna and Sutapa. And the next birth, I was Upendra, born of Aditi and Kashyapa. And now, for the third time, I am born as Krishna, from you, Devaki and Vasudeva. I have appeared in this Vishnu form just to convince you that I am the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, again taken birth. I could have appeared just like an ordinary child, but in that way you would not have believed that the Supreme Personality of Godhead had taken birth in your womb. My dear father and mother, you have therefore raised me many times as your child, with great affection and love, and I am therefore very much pleased and obliged to you. And I assure you that this time you shall go back home, back to Godhead, on account of your perfection in your mission. I know that you are very concerned about me and afraid of Kamsa. Therefore, I order you to take me immediately to Gokula and exchange me for the daughter who has just been born to Yashoda. Having spoken thus to his father and mother, the Lord turned himself into an ordinary child in their presence and remained silent. Being ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva prepared to take his son from the delivery room. And exactly at that time, a daughter was born to Nanda and Yashoda. She was Yogamaya, the internal potency of the Lord. By the influence of this internal potency, Yogamaya, all the residents of Kamsa's palace, especially the doorkeepers, were overwhelmed with deep sleep. And all the palace doors opened, although they were barred and shackled with iron chains. The night was very fierce, excuse me, the night was very dark. The night was very dark. Storm comes later. The night was very dark. But as soon as Vasudeva took Krishna on his lap and went out, he could see everything, just as in the sunlight. Or as if he had night vision goggles. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that Krishna is just like sunlight, and that wherever there is Krishna, the illusory energy, which is compared to darkness, cannot remain. When Vasudeva was carrying Krishna, the darkness of night disappeared. All the prison doors automatically opened. At the same time, there was thunder in the sky and severe rainfall. While Vasudeva was carrying his son Krishna in the falling rain, Lord Shesha, in the shape of a serpent, spread his hood over the head of Vasudeva so that he would not be hampered by the rainfall. Vasudeva came onto the bank of the Jamuna and saw that the water of the Jamuna was roaring with waves and that the whole span was full of foam. Still, in that furious feature, the river gave passage to Vasudeva to cross, just as the great Indian Ocean gave a path to Lord Rama when he was bridging over the gulf. This way, Vasudeva crossed the river Jamuna. On the other side, he went to the palace of Nanda Maharaj, situated in Gokula, where he saw that all the cowherd men were fast asleep. He took the opportunity to silently enter the house of Yashoda and without difficulty he exchanged his son with a baby girl newly born there. Then, after entering the house very silently and exchanging the boy with the girl, he returned to the prison of Kamsa and silently put the girl in the lap of Devaki. He again clamped the shackles on himself so that Kamsa could not recognize that so many things had happened. Mother Yashoda understood that a child had been born to her, but because she was very tired from the labor of childbirth, she fell fast asleep. When she awoke, she could not remember whether she had given birth to a male or a female child. Thus ends the Bhakti Granth purport, third chapter of Krishna, the birth of Lord Krishna. Please stop there.
You said that the Lord was born to Prasada Goswami
and Aditi and Kashyapa.
Yeah, so that means that he's the younger brother of the Buddha, and then one of his forms.
Well, he's called Indranidra, the younger brother of Indra. I don't know what the sequence of births. All those who were born of Aditi, and everybody was born of Aditi and Kashyapa, practically speaking. All the demigods. Kashyapa, other's wife, Diti, gives birth to Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, also Kamsa. So the demons and the demigods are basically half brothers. Same father, different mother. It's a family fight. The worst kind. If you want to wait, I'll read the next chapter, which is very short. A few pages. Or maybe? Kamsa begins his persecutions. After Vasudeva adjusted things as they had been before he carried Krishna to Gokula, and all the doors and gates became similarly closed, the gatekeepers awoke and heard the newborn child crying. Kamsa was waiting to hear the news of the child's birth, and the gatekeepers immediately approached him and informed him that the child was born. At that time, Kamsa got up from his bed very quickly and exclaimed, "Now the cruel death of my life is born." Kamsa became perplexed now that his death was approaching, and his hair scattered. Immediately he proceeded toward the place where the child was born. Devaki, upon seeing her brother approaching, prayed in a very meek attitude to Kamsa, "My dear brother, please do not kill this female child. I promise that this child will be the wife of your son. Therefore, don't kill her. You are not to be killed by any female child. That was the prophecy. You're to be killed by a male child. So please, don't kill her. My dear brother, you have killed so many of my children who were just born shining like the sun. That is not your fault. You've been advised by demoniac friends to kill my children. But now, I beg you, excuse this girl at least. Let her live as my daughter." Kamsa was so cruel that he did not listen to the pitiful prayers of his sister Devaki. He forcibly grabbed the newborn child to rebuke his sister and attempted to dash her on the stone mercilessly. This is a graphic example of a cruel being who could sacrifice all relationships for the sake of personal gratification. But immediately the child slipped out of his hands, went up into the sky, and appeared with eight arms as the younger sister of Vishnu. She was decorated with nice garments and flower garlands and ornaments. In her eight hands she held a bow, lance, arrows, sword, conchal disc, club, and shield. Seeing the appearance of the child, she was actually the goddess Durga. All the demigods from different planets like Siddhaloka, Charanaloka, Gandharvaloka, Apsaraloka, Kinaraloka, and Uragaloka presented her with various articles and began to offer their respective prayers. From above, the goddess addressed Kamsa, "You rascal, how can you kill me? The child who will kill you is already born before me somewhere within this world. Don't be so cruel to your poor sister." After this appearance, goddess Durga became known by various names in various parts of the world. After hearing these words, Kamsa became very much overwhelmed with fear. Out of pity, he immediately released Vasudeva and Devaki from the bondage of their shackles and very politely began to address them. He said, "My dear sister and brother-in-law, I have acted just like a demon in killing my own nephews, your children, and therefore I have given up all consideration of our intimate relationship. I do not know what will be the result of these envious acts of mine. Probably I shall be sent to the hell where killers of Brahmins go. I am surprised, however, that the celestial prophecy has not come true. False propaganda is not found only in human society. Now it appears that even the celestial denizens speak lies. Because I believed in the words of the celestial denizens, I have committed so many sins by killing the children of my sister. My dear Vasudeva and Devaki, you are both very great souls. I have nothing to instruct you, but still I request that you not be sorry for the death of your children. Every one of us is under the control of superior power, and that superior power does not allow us to remain together. We are bound to be separated from our friends and relatives in due course of time. But we must know for certain that even after the disappearance of the different material bodies, the soul remains intact eternally." Preaching by Kamsa. For example, there are many parts made of earthly clay, and they are prepared and also broken. But in spite of this, the earth remains as it is perpetually. Similarly, the bodies of the soul under different conditions are made and destroyed, but the spirit soul remains eternally. So there's nothing to lament over. Everyone should understand that this material body is different from the spirit soul. And so long as one does not come to that understanding, he is sure to accept the process of transmigration from one body to another. My dear sister Devaki, you are so gentle and kind. Please excuse me. Don't be aggrieved by the death of your children, which I have caused. Actually, this was not done by me, because all these are predestined activities. One has to act according to the predestined plan, even unwillingly. People misunderstand that with the end of the body, the self dies, and they think that one can kill another living entity. All these misconceptions oblige one to accept the conditions of material existence. In other words, so long as one is not firmly convinced of the eternality of the soul, one is subjected to the tribulations of being the killer and killed. May dear sister Devaki and brother-in-law Vasudeva kindly excuse the atrocities I have committed against you. I am so very poor-hearted and you are so great-hearted. So take compassion upon me and excuse me. While Kamsa was speaking to his brother-in-law and sister, tears flowed from his eyes, and he fell down at their feet. Believing the words of Durga Devi, whom he had tried to kill, Kamsa immediately released his brother-in-law and sister. He personally unlocked the iron shackles and very sympathetically showed his friendship for his family members. When Devaki saw her brother so repentant, she also became pacified and forgot all his atrocious activities against her children. Vasudeva also, forgetting all past incidents, spoke smilingly with his brother-in-law. Vasudeva told Kamsa, "My dear fortunate brother-in-law, what you're saying about the material body and the soul is correct. Every living entity is born in earth. Misunderstanding this material body to be the self, this conception of life is due to ignorance, and on the basis of this ignorance we create enmity or friendship, lamentation, jubilation, fearfulness, envy, greed, illusion, and madness are different features of our material concept of life. A person that influenced like this engages in enmity due only to the material body. Being engaged in such activities, we forget our eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead." It's only a temporary state. I'm sorry. We'll revert to time. Vasudeva took this opportunity of Kamsa's benevolence and informed him that his atheistic activities were also due to the misconception of life, namely taking the material body to be the self. When Vasudeva talked with Kamsa in such an illuminating way, Kamsa became very pleased that his guilt for killing his nephews subsided. With the permission of his sister Devaki, brother-in-law Vasudeva, he returned to his home with a relieved mind. But the next day, Kamsa called all his counselors together and narrated to them all the incidents that had happened the night before. All the counselors of Kamsa were beings and eternal enemies of the demigods. So they became depressed upon hearing their master speak of the night's events. And although they were not very much experienced or learned, they began to give instructions to Kamsa as follows. "Dear sir, let us now make arrangements to kill all the children who were born within the last 10 days in all towns, counties, villages, and pasturing grounds. let us execute this plan indiscriminately. We think that the demigods cannot do anything against us if we perform these atrocities. They're always afraid of fighting with us. And even if they wish to check our activities, they will not dare to do so. Because of your immeasurable strength, they fear your bow. Indeed, we have practical experience that whenever you stood to fight with them and began to shower your arrows on them, they immediately fled in all directions, just to save their lives. Many of the demigods were unable to fight with you, and they immediately surrendered themselves unto you by loosening their turbans and the tufts of hair on their heads. With folded hands, they begged you to spare them and said, "My Lord, we are all afraid of your strength. Please release us from this dangerous fight." We've also seen many times that you would never kill such surrendered fighters when they were all fearful, their bows, arrows, and chariots broken, and forgetful of their military activities and unable to fight with you. So actually, we have nothing to fear from these demigods. They're very proud of being great fighters in peacetime, outside the war field. But actually, they cannot show any talent for military power on the war field. Although Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, and Lord Brahma are always ready to help the demigods headed by angels, we have no reason to be afraid of them. As far as Lord Vishnu is concerned, he has already hidden himself within the hearts of all the deities, and he cannot come out. As far as Lord Shiva is concerned, he has renounced all activities. He has already entered the forest. And Lord Brahma is always engaged in different types of austerities and meditation. And what to speak of Indra, he's a straw in comparison with your strength. Therefore, we have nothing to fear from any of these demigods, but we must not neglect them, for the demigods are our determined enemies. We must be careful to protect ourselves, to root them out from their very existence. We should just engage ourselves in your service and be always ready for your command. The demons continued to say, if there's some disease in the body which is neglected, it worsens and becomes incurable. Similarly, when one is not careful about restraining the senses and lets them loose, then it is very difficult to control them. Therefore, we must now be very careful of the demigods before they get too strong to be subdued. The foundation of the strength of the demigods is Lord Vishnu, because the ultimate goal of all religious principles is to satisfy them. The Vedic injunctions, the brahmanas, the cows, austerity, sacrifices, performance of charity, and distribution of wealth are all for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu. So let us immediately begin by killing all the brahmanas who are in charge of the Vedic knowledge, along with the great sages who are in charge of sacrificial ritualistic performances. Let us kill all the cows, which are the source of butter, which is so necessary for performing sacrifices. Please give us your permission to kill all these creatures. Actually, the limbs of the transcendental body of Lord Vishnu are the brahmanas, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, sense and mind control, faithfulness, charity, tolerance, and the performance of sacrifices. Lord Vishnu is situated in everyone's heart and is the leader of all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Brahma. Therefore, we think that to persecute the great sages and brahmanas is to kill Lord Vishnu. That's being advised by the demoniac ministers, Kamsa, who was, from the very beginning, the greatest rascal, decided to persecute the brahmanas and the Vaishnavas, being entrapped by the shackles of all-devouring eternal time. He ordered the demons to harass all kinds of saint persons and then enter his house. The adherents of Kamsa are all influenced by the mode of passion, as well as illusion by the mode of ignorance. and their only business was to create enmity with saintly persons. Such activities can only reduce one's duration of life. The demons accelerated that process and invited their deaths as soon as possible. The result of persecuting saintly persons is not only untimely death. The act is so offensive that the perpetrator also gradually loses his beauty, his fame, and his religious principles, and thus his promotion to higher planets is checked. Driven by various kinds of mental concoctions, the demons diminish all kinds of auspiciousness.